What's up, everyone, and welcome to episode 277 of Two Amazon Sellers and a Microphone, brought to you by Solozo. And today we get to talk to one of our favorites. High energy, so much fun. We're going to be talking about running an eight-figure Amazon empire. I mean, how exciting is that? So we'll talk all about that and so much more. But joining us is Eric Castellano from Amazon Lit. What's up, Eric?
What's up, fellas? Chris, Dustin, it's always a pleasure. Excited to be back on and kind of share some insights. You know, I appreciate you having me.
Oh, yeah. We're very excited. I mean, we had so much fun talking to you last time. I mean, Amazon Lit is everywhere on my social media feed. Sure. I see all your content. It's amazing. You guys are so good at just offering advice. I mean, you're giving an inside look into your business. You're helping so many people out. Get started primarily in wholesale model on Amazon. Yeah. You know, there's lots of different ways to sell, but wholesale, I mean, you guys have your story. We talked to you. It was just a little over a year ago. Mm-hmm. And so people can look back at that episode. You gave a great background, how you got into it, into the space, starting with like arbitrage and retail arbitrage and flipping stuff and growing. And you just scaled so fast. And we want to bring you back on just to get some updates with what's going on. So how's everything going for you guys over there?
So business is going well. You know, we're continuing to grow month over month, which is really the name of the game for us. But as a lot of you are aware, you know, profit has become a huge topic of discussion in our business, because as Amazon continues to get, you know, competitive and everybody's opening up wholesale accounts, like profit is at the forefront of every decision we make. And early on, it wasn't always like that. Our goal early on was just to sell a lot of inventory and kind of build a space for us in Amazon as a reputable Amazon seller.
Well, Chris, you're the one who brought it up before we started. You want to ask the question about the orange bars?
Yeah. You guys will follow him on Instagram or Twitter. But it said orange bars are cool, but profit is better or something along those lines. Yeah. I saw that. I was like, gosh, that's so true. People will post screenshots of like orange bars. And for those of you that you sell on Amazon, you know what those are. But, you know, like, oh, look at our numbers. It's like, okay, what's your profit though? That profit's even better. And especially now with, I think since the last time we've talked, margins are getting tighter. You got to be more profitable. Is that what you're seeing as well in the wholesale space?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I still think it's a wonderful time to start an Amazon business, because there's a lot of opportunity. But what I'm training my team, as well as some of the sellers I work with directly, to do is just be more, a little more picky with the products that you're picking, and make sure you're really analyzing the data. You have minimum buying requirements, you understand your prep costs, and you have a full picture of what it costs to really operate your business. So when you buy a product, you have a clear vision of what the expected profit can be on the sale of those items.
Where are you seeing this profit squeeze? I mean, I'm sure it's coming from a lot of different places. Amazon fees change. Wow. Your transportation logistics change, distributor and wholesale cost of products is probably changing. Are you getting it from all fronts, or is there something that's really causing this? Just the awareness, more of a focus on this.
Yeah. So one of the things that contributed a lot was the increase in removal and disposal fees from Amazon. You know, that's costing us right now about $15,000 to $20,000 a month in additional expenses. It used to be around $4,000 to $8,000. So that is 3x in itself. As well as, there's a lot of sellers, I'm sure we all know, on Amazon Marketplace that really don't know what they're doing. So they buy inventory, they drop prices. And what happens is a lot of sellers get scared, and instead of looking at the data, they match and drop prices as well. Instead of being like, oh, this guy's going to be sold out in 3 weeks, I'm just going to hold on my inventory and let it ride. So between, you know, the sellers really not knowing what they're doing, the competition, the increase in FBA fees, those are all things we're being mindful of as we move forward in our company.
Something I want to touch on is your operation. I mean, this is probably a bigger operation than most of us have ever ran in our lives. I mean, an eight-figure warehouse, you got to probably lots of buyers. What are some difficulties with that? Like, you know, building a team, training them the way you want to train them, you know, like one wrong purchase order may not hurt you as much because of the volume you're doing, but somebody who's like a 5 or 6 figure seller, they make one wrong buy, it could kill their whole entire business. So what are some things that, you know, you've found with growing a team that have been difficult to kind of overcome?
Yeah. So I would say one of the key takeaways that I'd like to discuss about building a team is properly trained management, you know, because to just me or my business partner, Sebastian, managing the warehouse, managing the buyers, managing the web development team, it would be impossible for us to do that with our schedules. We'd never be able to allocate the time to properly train those employees to be able to perform. But some of the things we put in place, in our warehouse, we have daily production goals and we incentivize our employees to hit those, right? And then B, with our buyers, we have purchase requirements. So like an example of a purchase requirement is anything over $15,000 cost of goods needs at least to be shared with someone else on the team before it's made, right? This way you're getting multiple eyes looking at that decision. And it's not just one person going with their gut, like, I'm getting it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good little double check system. Cause I can't imagine, I've made my own bad purchases and having somebody to look at it and like take your eyes off. Sometimes we fall in love with an idea like, ooh, this is going to be good. I'm going to make so much money on this one.
Yeah.
And then someone says, hey, you know, this is a large item. It's going to charge you out the ass for storage or something. So,
yeah. And really those requirements are based on your company. So if you're operating a smaller business, like many years ago, we had a requirement, it was like 4,000 and then it was 8,000 and then it was 10. And we continue to raise it as our company gets bigger based on, you know, the risk versus reward. If I'm willing to risk that 15K without an approval or that $14,900 without an approval, I'm comfortable doing that. But anything over needs to be looked at.
How big a team are we talking that you have now? How big of employees? How many employees you have now?
We have about 45 in-house employees and another maybe 7 to 10 virtual assistants.
Gotcha.
That's an operation. That's a good operation. It's amazing. I mean, your growth, just following you, watching your story, it's amazing. And it should be inspiring and encouraging because I know we've just talked about some of the difficulties, but as it's always been, those difficulties provide opportunities for the people that are in it, you know, and from that, what are you, you know, you mentioned you're really trying to focus on making sure that the products that you're trying to focus on, that the metrics are right for the products that you are buying now. What are some of those things that you're looking for to make sure that there is not that profit pinch?
Yeah. So number one is what I call PCPA in our business, production cost per ASIN. Very simple metric to calculate. It's your entire monthly expenses to run your operation divided by the amount of orders you produce in that same period. So if you're analyzing 30 days, it's your 30-day expenses divided by the orders that you're producing. And what that number tells me is how much it costs my company to get one product packaged, labeled, and shipped out the door, you know, and for us, that's right around $1.50. So I know that my minimum buying requirement has to be greater than that $1.50 in order to see a return on the products that we're purchasing.
Makes sense.
And we're just firing away questions and I'm just, Dustin's going, I'm going, we're just going all over the map.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm here.
So it feels to me from an outsider looking and following you that Amazon is probably just a byproduct now for you because I feel like from what I see from your content, you're spitting truths. And I feel like you like to see other people win and people follow what you're teaching. And your business is such, you know, driven with systems and things are going smoothly that you get more thrill out of seeing your students, you know, scale up and you're spitting truth bombs all over social media. That probably gives you a little bit more joy than what it used to be. Am I right?
100%. You know, I still get a lot of fulfillment. Like nothing brings me more peace than spending 2 or 3 hours going through a catalog and putting together a $40,000, $50,000 order. That brings me a lot of peace. But I think what really helps me sleep at night comfortably is knowing that I'm changing people's lives and helping them build multi-million-dollar businesses to provide for their family. That's definitely made a huge, huge impact on my life.
Do you feel like there was a time where, like, I'm just trying to put myself in your shoes, where you got your systems going, and you're like, yeah, this is great, but the guy next door is struggling. Let me go help him.
Yeah.
And that just gives you a little bit more, like, I love calling, or people call in, talk about Slozo, and I love, like, helping them with sellers.
Yeah.
Was there a spot in, like, your business where, like, you transitioned your mindset from hustle, 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 to now let's just provide and help?
Yeah, so it really all started in 2018. I did a lot of one-on-one calls. I probably did over 2,000 one-on-one calls with Amazon sellers from around the world. And I did that for about 2.5 years. And from 2018 to maybe end of 2020, what I was able to do was learn everybody's pain points. Because every call I had, I'd pop open my Excel document and be like, this guy's struggling with suppliers. This guy's struggling with his purchasing. This guy's struggling with hiring teams. And then I would put, you know, check marks every time someone had the same issue, the same issue, the same issue. So that really taught me a lot about what people need as Amazon business owners in order to grow. And then through our training courses and recently our inner circle, I'm able to work more hands-on and assist those sellers really fine-tuning their processes, because there's only so much change that can happen from a YouTube video or even a course or a live weekly call. But when you're more hands-on with a business, you can truly revolutionize their growth.
It's so true. And your approach, I feel like it's contrary to a typical business. I mean, you're helping create and build competitors to right. you. I mean, right. and it's like, it's like Coke giving Pepsi their formula or whatever.
But there's so much products out there.
Exactly.
It's like this, like 1% are going to do something about yeah. it. You know, like you can give away all the secrets, the supplier list, the contacts you have, but those, they still got to take action.
They still got to take action. Yeah, that's very true. And you know what? Sometimes Sebastian and myself, we have phone calls and we're like, what are we doing right now? Because like some of my programs are multiple five-figure programs, but I'm like, we're helping these people build. So for example, this guy, he's in our inner circle. We've been working with him closely for about 2 years now. We've been to his warehouse 3 or 4 times. We've helped him optimize his workspace, streamline his efficiency, like everything. And he's now almost the top 100 seller. He's like ranked 150.
Wow. You know?
And that guy got a steal, man, for even whatever it was, 75,000. Like the guy got a bargain, man.
Well, but he probably saw value. And I was like, you know, gosh, you can watch so much YouTube videos and you're just running around chasing ideas. But if you find like a mentor like yourself or a coach or a program, if you put up the money for it, you're yeah. going to be involved in it. I think that's why people like, you know, $10,000 courses, $50,000 courses, I want legit players in it.
Yeah.
And I feel like for you, you know, like I said, it's contrary. I mean, you get so many people that we'll talk to them or whatever. They're like, we're going to help them with their advertising. They're like, I don't want you to know what my product is. Yeah. And you're like, pull down the gates here. I mean, I want to help. And I know you're the same way, but I feel like, and I'm speaking for myself, speaking with other people who are in the same boat, giving you, you know, your advice to them, I'm sure you've learned a ton of applications to your own business by seeing a struggle or something that maybe hasn't even popped up on your radar yet. And it's got to be a win-win all the way around.
100%. It really allows me to stay or my business to stay ahead of the curve, because I have access to so many different people at all different levels that there's really no question or solution that goes unsolved. Because if I don't have the answer, someone in my community will. But also, like you said, Dustin, I'm learning about things that maybe I wasn't even familiar with yet.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. There's
all right.
Go ahead, Chris.
How many times do you check your seller app a day?
Maybe only a few times a week, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. I used to, when I, listen, when I first started this, you know, back in like 16, 17, I was refreshing 45 times a day, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But now once in a while at night, and typically I only pop in there if I'm going to post something on Instagram, because it's one of the things I least like posting is orange bars, but the community loves it. So I post them really for them. It's not for me. It's not to show off. It's just to let people know, like, hey, this is what I do for a living, and we're pretty good at it.
And are there certain categories that you stay away from that you just don't touch? Or, and then the other part of that question, what are some good categories that you just go all in on?
We stay far away from apparel and shoes. The return rate is between 15 and 20%, eats up a lot of the margins. We also stay away from high-end electronics, specifically like hair trimmers, basically any gaming consoles, anything with a high price point that's electronic, the return rates are very high as well. Our bread and butter is health, beauty, home and kitchen, and I love grocery because you can't return most of the products as well.
Now, did you learn the hard way about those categories like electronics and apparel? Were you guys dabbling in that stuff at the beginning? You're like, you know what? We're done with these.
Yeah, so pre-COVID, right around 2020, we built a great relationship with a guy up the street from me, and he's a wholesaler, and he's in the shoe business, and we placed a couple six-figure purchase orders from him, and it looks, on paper, it looked really good, right? Profits are coming in. You see his average like 15, 18% margins. But then after all the returns came in, we were making 2-3 percentage points. And at that point, it's like I invested, you know, $400,000 or $500,000 to make 20 grand. Like that's not worth it for us.
That money can be used to make more money somewhere else.
Much more.
What is that margin you're looking at? Like, what is that? 10, 15? Is that what you're headed towards?
Yeah. So our minimum buying requirement is 10% gross margin and $2.50. So it has to meet both of those requirements, and or we won't bring it into our store.
So do lower priced items get pushed off because of those numbers? I mean, do you sell anything that is like a $10 retail item or a $15 retail? I mean, it's hard to get to those numbers with 10% plus 250.
Yeah.
If they're low, does that automatically eliminate most of those?
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually just ran this data the other day, now that they're eliminating the small and light program and changing it to the reduced FBA fees on August 29th. And small and light makes up 15% of our total catalog.
Okay.
So you're talking maybe 600,000, 700,000 in sales. So it's not a huge percentage, but our profits are very reasonable for those products. So I don't mind selling them as long as they meet those requirements.
Yeah. I mean, so let's talk through just what the flow looks like of creating deals with new brands, becoming whole. Like, how often are you bringing on new products, new brands? I mean, obviously, versus you've got the established ones that are just hopefully constantly being reordered.
Yeah.
But what's the velocity of adding products to your catalog look like?
Yeah. So about 50% of our SKUs are new products that we're adding. You know,
Wow. We
ship on average, 12 times six. So we ship on average about 70, 75,000 orders a month to Amazon, which is probably, let me see, 75,000 divided by, let's just say average 60. Yeah, it's about, so we bring out about 700 to 800 new products a month.
Wow. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And how many are you discontinuing a month?
Listen, I would say probably about the same, right? Because we have about a 50-50 split of replenishable versus non-replenishable. So sometimes you might get a killer SKU that sells really great for 4 or 5 months, and then you just never pick it up again. Other SKUs may be seasonal, or like right now, Intex blow-up toys are really big. We sell a lot of those. So certain SKUs are seasonal. Certain have their peaks and valleys where they're profitable at certain times of the year, and we're just analyzing the data.
Seasonal is an interesting topic in this, because your buying has to be spot on.
Yeah.
I mean, mean, you don't want to have excess inventory after that season goes. How deep of an analysis are you guys doing in terms of seasonal products?
Yeah, so we're actually placing seasonal orders sometimes 4 to 6 months in advance. So right now, we've already been placing for probably the past 30 days all of our holiday orders for October, November, December. And what we're using to analyze that data is, obviously, if you have real-time data from your business because you sold the product before, that's the best data. But if you don't have that data, I'm analyzing Keepa charts from last year's Christmas and holiday season, the previous years. I'm analyzing what sellers jump in. There's some products that get more expensive after the holidays, like pumpkin spice coffees. Those are great products to sell. So we're just analyzing all the data that's provided from the softwares we use and making educated buying decisions.
Every SKU has a story. I'm like, I can't imagine, like, your buying team has to be locked in. Yeah. I mean, because every SKU has a peak and valley. They have a buying season. Is this where you shine on the product team? Are you in charge of the buying side of the business and you train them, or how's that look on the buying side?
Yeah, so I actually, for the first maybe 6 years, I trained every single buyer that we brought on. And now I've since passed that role. I passed it to our strongest buyer who doesn't do much buying anymore. She's now more training virtual assistants and managing the buying team. But what's crazy is our buying is stronger than it's ever been. And we also have the least amount of buyers that we've ever had. We only have three buyers right now.
Wow.
Interesting.
Wow. Yeah.
What is
deals? Like you have to have good relationships, and I'm sure you built these over times. When with your suppliers and wholesalers, are you like first dibs? Hey, let's go talk to Amazon Lit guys and let's get these products out. Or like, have you built so much good relationship with these suppliers that you kind of get cherry picking items?
So with some of them, yeah, that happens. But a lot of them, we're dealing with the same catalog that the other sellers are dealing with. So for example, I just had a call with one of my Inner Circle members. And come to find out, we're doing business with the same catalog. So I was like, this is great. We're on a call. Let's pop open the catalog. We look at it. It's got the same number of products, same exact pricing. Their year-to-date spend was about $150,000. And our year-to-date spend was about $1.4 million, right?
Crazy.
So it just goes to show that they're not leveraging and optimizing their buying process. And particularly, it was because they were using VAs to go through the catalog and then share that information with the buyer, who's not even really a buyer. They're just a reviewer.
Mm-hmm.
What's it look like? Cause I know, and correct me if I'm wrong here. This is my gut is the wholesale. I mean, a lot of the best deals, especially in the past, were brands who did not really own their Amazon presence.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't vendor accounts with Amazon. They didn't have their own seller accounts. They were just selling directly to retail stores, distributors. You're able to get those, present their products really well on Amazon. And that was the win for you. Recently, it seems like brands are starting to pay attention more to their Amazon presence, maybe taking over Amazon. Is that a tough issue with a lot of the products that you're selling now, or are you seeing that more, or am I off base?
No, you're 100% correct, Dustin. And that's where we're allocating a lot. That's where I'm allocating a lot of my time, is building those relationships with those brands to get them under our storefront, enrolled in brand registry, fully protected, manage their listings, set. I don't like to call it MAP pricing. I've never been a big fan of MAP pricing, but set more consistent pricing, more consistent in-stock rates. So when customers come back, they're not like, oh, I bought this $10 cheaper last week. Why is it $10 more?
Yeah. I mean, that seems to me like you've made the right play. Is you could be the resource. Like if brand XYZ, why would you invest the resources to try to take over your Amazon when you could sell direct to us and we can manage everything for you and take all of our expertise and make sure that your products are presented right, that bad actors are not on the listing, that your product, I mean, because that's still to this day something you look at Amazon and you're like, well, that's a name brand product and that is one horrific listing.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, or you'll see 12 of the same listings, you know, for the same product. So there's a big advantage for people that have been in wholesale for a long time to take that next step and to actually create a partnership with the brands and say, look, let us own the Amazon avenue for you and let us do it right.
Yeah.
Have you played around with other marketplaces? Yeah, sorry. I got like a list of questions. I'm trying to get all these in here.
You're good. So we did Walmart and eBay for probably 4 or 5 years. And about 2 years ago, we completely turned them off and decided to allocate all our resources to Amazon.
So no Walmart.
No Walmart.
What was the issue with Marketplace?
User interface. The user interface for listing creation and optimization is a nightmare. You almost need a full-time developer to really create your listings, especially for multi-packs. Creating multi-packs on Walmart is very tedious. And at the end of the day, they're still 10 years behind Amazon. Right? Wow. Amazon's at the forefront of this game. So
that's big from coming from, like, you're doing 8 figures. You would think like, hey, let's go dabble into Walmart, but you got focused solely on Amazon. So that's like a good, I guess, lesson. You know, a lot of us get shiny object syndrome. We're like, I'm gonna go play around on Walmart real quick. But you're like the second person this week that said, we don't even do Walmart anymore. We just focus solely on Amazon and keep that growing. Yeah. What about like Brazil or UK or Japan? Are you guys going to any of those international places?
Yeah, so we sold in UK for a couple of years. Our account's actually suspended right now in the United Kingdom due to just certain products that weren't eligible to be shipped cross-border, and somehow we got them in there. Amazon flagged them, so on and so forth. But other marketplaces, no, we actually turned off our NARF, which is North American Remote Fulfillment, stopped selling in Canada and Mexico because we're getting a lot of account health violations. And I advise most people to do that. At least if you're going to sell in those two marketplaces from the US, turn off your automatic listing creation. So every listing isn't created in those marketplaces because it could create a huge problem for your company moving forward.
Interesting.
Yeah. Because they have different laws, different guidelines, food and safety, like all that is completely different from Canada to Mexico to the US.
So I'm always nervous, like, and just for just being an Amazon seller, that my account's going to get shut down and this whole thing's going to be over with. What type of protection have you built to keep that from happening with your account?
Yeah. So two things. Number one, Shanice, she's an employee. She manages all the account health. She's on top of it. You know, it doesn't matter if it's 9 o'clock at night, 7 in the morning, if there's a notification that needs immediate action, she's making it happen. Two is we pay $5,000 a month for a SaaS core representative through Amazon, which does not guarantee that if you get suspended, you'll get your account back. But what it provides is a direct resource within Amazon to kind of help troubleshoot any issues that we're experiencing.
Was there a revenue mark you hit when they came asking you if you wanted that SaaS core? Was there a certain number you had to be selling before you were able to get that?
No, I'm pretty sure it's available to all sellers because I know some of the sellers I work with, they're doing, you know, 4 to 10 million and they have SaaS core representatives, but it's based on revenue. So we're at the highest tier, which is 5,000. And this might have changed recently, but it's typically between 2,000 a month and 5,000 a month for a SaaS core representative.
Okay.
Well, I mean, the account health is interesting because that's a scary page to go to sometimes when you're looking at sellers. And I learned this. I started as private label. I kind of went backwards. And there's a lot of people. A lot of people start with arbitrage or wholesale and then create private label. But, I mean, for years as private label, I was like, I didn't have to look at my account health. Yeah. I mean, it was great. I mean, there was not much that could go wrong. Yeah. And then I got into online arbitrage pretty heavily. And then as I got more and more involved in it, I'm like, I can't even look at my account health page. I mean, there's so many things that will just scare the heck out of me and open up case after case because things change all the time, like IP claims and, you know, you know, somebody changes the listing or the wording. I mean, there's just, it's, or products get pulled and you're unaware of it. I mean, there's so many things, but it does take a full-time person to manage that and constantly look at it.
It does. And Sebastian, he's literally a wizard when it comes to account health. Not only has he helped our account get reinstated, but he's helped hundreds of other people get their accounts reinstated. He just knows the verbiage that Amazon's really looking for, you know, which is huge, because this is what happens. Someone gets an account health issue and they respond like a human instead of a business owner. They put their emotions in it, you know, instead of being like, no, put your emotions aside, treat this like a business proposal and write that plan of action like you're a business owner, not a person who's sad because your account got suspended.
It's so true. In fact, I just talked to a seller who was in the healthcare space, and they were having issues because they couldn't put certain language, you know, like a cure type words or anything like that in their listing. And he was explaining to me his conversation with Amazon, and he kept saying, he was like, he was even doing it to me. He was showing me the thing. He's like, this is certified. It's the best. I mean, all of my patients are, I'm like, Amazon doesn't care. That's the wrong language. Give them the documentation that they're requiring for you to be able to do this. I'm like, you could, you know, tell them all the time about how wonderful it is, but that's not gonna do it. It's so interesting. You know, talking about a business of your size, I mean, there's so many logistics. In fact, last time we had you on, I distinctly remember this. You had a pile of labels next to you. It was just, I mean, it was thousands and thousands of labels, and you were showing us. I was like, you know, their operations have to be so buttoned up, and the way that you can create efficiencies just in, like, even like your labeling process or how you're packaging products to ship in, because there's so many ways to shave off a dollar, whether it's an employee time or everything. I mean, do you feel like that? I mean, is that an ever constantly changing aspect of your business where you're just constantly trying to, you know, make it more and more efficient, be able to do more in less time?
Yeah, 100%. Actually, this or last week, Sebastian and I, we spent multiple hours reviewing our data, seeing what we need to do to produce more inventory out of here to decrease that PCPA I was talking about earlier, which will in turn increase our profits. So we're doing everything. I'm counting steps. You know, I'm making sure my employees aren't moving around too much. You know, we're negotiating prices for FN SKU labels, boxes from local distributors, like everything, to put more money back into the company.
Is there something that, I'm sure there is, but what do you do poorly? What's something that is like, right now you wake up, you're like, we got to work on this better. We got to be better at this. We need to be more efficient in this area. What is an area of your business that you could improve on?
I need to build out a team to help me manage some of these brands now, because we're really getting, right now, me and Sebastian, we manage all the brands, and we do maybe $10 million a year in brand direct relationships. So it's a lot. It's a lot on our plate. It's really the main thing that I do in my business, manage brands and play around with our repricer to make sure our products are selling. So right now, something I need to do, which I've done before, I could do it again, but it's daunting to train another team member and import what's in here into their mind. But I need to start building out a team to help me, you know, move some of these brands in the right direction. So not because I'm having an issue with the current brands, but that we want to bring on new brands.
Right. And how many brands do you currently work with, roughly?
10 to 12.
Amazing. 10 to 12 brands, and it's an eight-figure business.
Yeah.
Like, that's I was expecting a higher number. That's good.
That's the ones you work direct with the brands, not distributors, is what you're saying.
No, those are all brand direct relationships. Like, we have some licensing contracts in North America. We have a bunch of brands enrolled in brand registry. And we manage all their listings. Yeah.
What's next for you? What's on the horizon, both with the business and with Amazon Lit?
Yeah. So You know, Amazon Lit, I really like our inner circle, which is, it's the only way to get direct access to me and Sebastian. And it's where we work personally one-on-one with you. We fly out to your warehouse. We spend the time training your team. I'd really like to get Amazon or inner circle to 100 businesses. Right now it's at about 45. I feel like at 100 businesses, I'd just be so happy because the people who join, they see the biggest growth than any other seller that we work with. So that's really something I'm focusing heavy on, is working exclusively with 7- and 8-figure business owners to help scale out. And then something I'm doing on the side is I'm going to start investing into some real estate properties. It's time now. I have a bunch of money stashed away. You know, I have a lot of it in the stock market, cryptocurrency, but I don't own any properties yet. So that's really my next move.
Well, we'll have to get you on later to talk about real estate. I mean, that's something that I definitely would like to get into as well. It's something I've always thought about doing. And I mean, it's like, there's a lot of opportunity there. If you've got money on the sidelines, it's a great vehicle to put it into. Yeah. Who's for your inner circle, for your group? Cause I know there's a lot of people listening right now. They're obviously like, I've got to learn more. I've got to get to know these guys. I've got to grow my business. Who's the perfect fit for working with you? What kind of personality, or what kind of state of their current business or no business?
Yeah.
Who succeeds the best with you?
Yeah. So number one, you got to be a 7-figure business owner, at least $1 million in the past 12 months in sales revenue, because that puts you at a point where you understand the fundamentals and you're looking for some growth. Typically, the bigger businesses usually excel quicker. Also, you have to be open to taking direction, right? Because what we do is we come in your business and we tell you what needs to be done. Now, obviously, these are suggestions, but if you don't follow them, you'll just continue along your current course of action, which has gotten to where you are, or gotten you to where you are, which is reaching out to me to help you build your business. So open to suggestions is being huge. And then also not afraid to invest in education, further education. The inner circle is not a $5,000, $10,000, $12,000 program. You know, it's multiple five figures. So you have to be willing to make that commitment to be like, you know what, these guys are going to help me grow my business by $5 million this year. And when I run those numbers, it makes absolute sense. So a lot of trust needs to be involved in the process as well.
I love it. I got one more too. Well, let me go with mine okay. Real quick first.
Okay.
Something I've think about, and I've always wondered, someone at running a business of your size, is there a role, or what is the role for Amazon advertising for someone who's in the wholesale space?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm glad you brought this up. So we spend probably $7,000 to $8,000 on our wholesale products a month. And what we do is what we call catch-all campaigns, right? They're very low bids. I'm talking 5 to 25 cents per bid, you know, maybe $25 to $50 daily budgets. And what we're doing is we're throwing in our non-competitive, our excess inventory, the products that the ranking went a little higher. So that's a portion of the advertising, which I encourage most wholesalers to do. It'll give you a boost in sales, and typical ACoS will be between like 3% and 6%. So very, very healthy. I'm willing to spend 3 cents on the dollar to get an extra dollar in my business all day long. The second part is when you start partnering with brands, and my pitch to these brands is always to get them to pay for ads. So right now we have probably another $10,000 in monthly budget coming from the brands that we manage. And actually, I just recently set up my first sponsored brands campaign. I'm typically a PPC coupon volume discount guy, and I'm getting murdered on these sponsored brand campaigns. I'm getting murdered. The ACoS is like 300%. I'm spending, you know, $1,000 a week. I'm like, what am I doing here?
It's all relative, isn't it? It's
all... I believe it. But interesting. All but right. I mean, low bid catch all campaigns. Huge. I mean, we recommend that to everybody, no matter what model they're selling under. They always perform well, and they do give you a lift without incurring a huge ACoS. So it's a great point. All right, Chris, you know you got one more.
Yeah, I like the non-Amazon question, so I'm going to go there. So like business, entrepreneurship, things that Dustin and I really like. Who are some guys or some things that you, people you follow to like keep your mind sharp, you know, keep you motivated? Who are some people that you follow?
Yeah. Ed Mylett, love the guy. He's just real raw, authentic. Yeah. You know, he's just got this kind of whatever personality. Like, you can do this or you cannot, but I'm telling you, this is going to change your life.
Yep.
You know, I love Russell Brunson. I joined his inner circle. Basically anything he puts out, I pay for it. I bought $1,000 book from him a couple months ago. It's just like anything the guy does, I want a piece of the action. Something I really look for when I'm looking for people who to kind of guide me on my journey is like, do they have some sort of spiritual connection? It doesn't have to be religious, but I find like the people who have some sort of connection with something higher than themselves typically accelerate and do better than anybody else, right? So that's something I'm looking for. And then also, like, are they actually doing what they're saying they're doing? Because there's a lot of people out there, as we all know, who just really don't deliver on what they're talking about. You know, I also love lately Grant Cardone, the content he's been putting out with his daughter. He's been having his 14-year-old daughter on these sales calls, and she's closing people for, you know, in-person event tickets, and like he's breaking down the numbers, how, you know, you made 20 phone calls, you only sold one ticket, so like those 20 phone calls, they actually paid you $25 a phone call even though you didn't close them. Like, all this education for his children is truly mind-blowing for me.
That's good to know.
Yeah, I'm gonna check that out.
You don't learn that in school.
Yeah, no, you don't learn that in school.
No.
Yeah,
unbelievable. Eric, great stuff. We've got all the links for everyone to check out Amazon Lit, learn more about Inner Circle if they're running a seven-figure business. You always bring a lot of insights. It's always encouraging talking to you. Keep putting that content out. I know you won't stop anyway, but it's great for everyone. I love consuming your content that you put out. It's fun to see you guys walk around the warehouse and see what's going on and the growth. So we really appreciate you taking the time to join us. It's been an absolute blast.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. It's always a pleasure, and I'm looking forward to connecting on the next one as well.
You got it. All right, thanks, Eric, and thanks, everyone, for tuning in today. We'll be back at this again tomorrow. See ya.